Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Darkcast Network,
where the light shines brightest on our indie podcasts.
Crime Con is going to be in Las Vegas in 2022, and it's going to be super lit.
We are pretty excited to be able to attend again and meet up with some of the folks that we met last year, plus meet some new true crime buddies, hopefully you.
That's right. We'll be on Podcast Row with many other great podcasts. Plus, there's going to be tons of sessions, big personalities, and entertainment with plenty of opportunities to meet other like-minded folks.
Please join us from April 29th to May 1st. And did we mention it's going to be in Las Vegas?
Viva Las Vegas! Tickets are on sale right now. Just go to crimecon.com and be sure to use the code Fruit Loops. That's FRUITLOOPS to save 10% and let them know we sent you.
That's crimecon.com. Use the code Fruit Loops. We are so excited to meet you. This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Fruit Loops, episode 149.
Yeah.
Bienvenidos, bitches. Thank you so much for listening, and puti benafi for all my Garifuna listeners out there. Now, Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that we don't hear or know much about. Contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cis, able-bodied, white dudes.
What?
No. There are many well-documented cases of serial killers of color, and Fruit Loops is a podcast all about them. We will take deep dives into the fascinating lives and crimes of serial killers and true crimes committed by people of color and the victims that the media and entertainment commonly leave out because the news is racist.
Allegedly.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman. And I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
It is not her fault, y'all.
We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists. Just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions. Please send any questions or comments to FruitloopsPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 602-935-6294. And we may feature it on a future episode.
Also, our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron.
Woo!
So, yes, ma'am. Are we talking about today, Beth?
Today we're talking about Tony Alvin Abels, a serial killer located in St. Petersburg, Florida.
I feel like you have to make the distinction because apparently there is a Tony Abels who is, I think, a Russian serial killer.
Oh,
okay. Who has a net worth apparently of like $1.5 million. I was like, wait a minute, which Abels is this? So
Alvin Abels. Yes,
Tony Alvin Abels. But before we get into it, how you doing?
Well, it's been one crazy week.
Where do we begin?
Yeah. I went to visit my daughter in North Dakota.
Nice.
And my grandson's meds are not really working right now.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, he was, you know, he's still sweet and everything. He's just
of course
super duper hyper. And, you know, he's constantly going, has a hard time sleeping, gets up early in the morning. So I was unable to get any work done on the podcast while I was there. And then my flight out last Wednesday, which I was gonna work on the podcast then, it was delayed until the next day. Like the
son
next
of a bitch
day.
Yeah. Oh my god.
At least, you know, I got to spend the night again at my daughter's house, so it wasn't like I had to stay in a hotel or anything.
Yeah, but that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
But then I spent most of the next day in the Minneapolis airport. So,
woo! No, I'm just kidding. Fun.
Yeah.
So, isn't that a big airport though? Lots to do.
It's pretty big. Yeah, and there was a lot of places to buy food and stuff like that. But
which is fucking expensive in the airport.
I must have spent like $100 on food at the airports going there and back. Like all together, I'm pretty sure I spent like $100 and just on sandwiches and bullshit, you know?
Oh, damn.
It's so annoying. Yeah.
It's even expensive. Oh gosh, it's just water, everything. Gum. I mean,
yeah, everything's expensive.
It's highway robbery.
It really is, because there's nothing you can do about it once you're stuck in there.
Yeah.
What else?
You're trapped.
Yeah.
You're trapped. Yeah. But you know what I wonder?
What?
Could you order Postmates and have it delivered like at the checkpoint?
At the security gate?
Yeah. I wonder if anybody's tried that. I don't know.
I don't know either.
You don't have your groceries delivered? I don't know.
I suspect it's not possible.
Damn it. Well, here we are. I'm glad you made it safely back home, though, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was amazing you were able to get all that, because the episode was late. We apologize, y'all, but you posted it.
That.
You did that shit.
I finished editing it and I posted it while I was at the Minneapolis airport.
That's amazing.
It was fun because I wasn't bored. I wasn't just sitting there. I was working. So that was cool.
Well, I'm glad you are back.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. I traveled too. I went to LA for a wedding. I have a lot of cousins. He got married, and it was crazy because this is the cousin that, like, you know, we grew up together, right? We're the exact same age, and all of a sudden this my little friend is like a grown man married, and it was cool seeing all my family and stuff, all the aunties, and but my flight was delayed as well, not a whole damn day though.
Crazy, man.
I don't know what it was, if it was the weather. Well, they told us that the pilot was late. So
yeah, with mine it was mechanical stuff. So I wasn't too sad that they made us wait. Like, if that plane's not working, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, it's one of those things you do want to be sure.
Yeah, and
that
you
things
kinda
are
do
good.
Need a pilot. So
yes, ma'am. But then when I got back, because we're recording this last day of Black History Month.
Right.
And one of the things we did there was a parade in Stone Mountain. We've talked about Stone Mountain before
we have.
On the show.
Right.
But
and you said you would never go.
I did. Can you believe it? Well, now I live there.
Right.
I live in Stone Mountain.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So we've been checking out the neighborhood and stuff. And there was this parade and there was all these black marching bands.
Oh,
and
wow.
The vibe was incredible. There was the drum majors doing all their dances and the majorettes and the horns and the drum lines. Oh my God.
So cool.
It was so fun. So anyway.
So Stone Mountain's not so bad. Huh?
Stone Mountain has really turned around. I gotta say though, I told people that, oh yeah, I'm moving to Stone Mountain, and my relatives were like, are you sure? Yeah, I'm sure that my whole neighborhood's black, and this parade was really, really awesome. And so far, so good. I know that Stone Mountain has a very storied history, but guess what? So does every other place in this damn United States.
Yeah, true, true. Very true.
So
yeah.
Now let's get into some listener letters.
Thank you, Angel.
Yes. I love that sweet sound. What's in the bag?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Kyle or Kylie. I'm not sure. It's ky.ll.e.
Okay.
And Sonia2530 for your 5-star reviews.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Hip hop air horns to you all. Yes, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. And we got an email from Anonymous. Anonymous said, just listened to an episode from a few months back where you mentioned that prison guards can be violent or antisocial, not unlike the stereotype of the criminals they
incarcerate. Talk about it.
Yeah. Someone I know worked as a health professional in a prison and came away with some awful experiences from their interactions with the guards, even though they was only there as a healthcare professional. Guards at the doors into different parts of the prison thought it was funny to shut the metal doors suddenly as health staff were going through and see if the health staff got injured. One healthcare provider broke a bone because the guards closed the door on them. The guards thought it was funny that they were in pain. Hilarious.
What?
So funny. Yeah. Guards yelled at incarcerated people without cause, took privileges away from incarcerated people to display power over them, and complained about incarcerated people placed on suicide watch. Mm-hmm. The person I know always said that no matter what someone might be incarcerated for, they deserve to be treated like a human being, including having human rights and access to health care.
Amen.
Yeah. And while national elections may make bigger news this November, state and local elections also have big impacts on the lives of incarcerated people and many other vulnerable communities, including access to healthcare and other basic needs. To all the listeners, please make sure you are registered and make a plan to vote this November from the national level all the way down to your local leadership. Your vote can make a difference.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So thank you, Anonymous. That was really interesting email.
Yeah.
And thank you for the plea for voting.
Yeah. That's a wrap. Look alive, y'all. Yeah. It's crazy out there. Bye. I'm going to go vote. Well, we got some new patrons. The Melanated Alchemist, a.k.a. Sarita, sent us a handsome donation on the Cash
App. Nice.
And Denisha is a new Podbean patron. So hip hop air horns to you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
And here are your tunes. Let's see. On that brown with a twist, tell these hoes to reminisce. Thank the Melanated Alchemist. And I'm like, bitch, let me tell you about that super fly, dirty, dirty third coast, muddy water, shorty, pop that pussy if you wanna. I just thought that the Melanated Alchemist might appreciate that. And plus, I've been listening to Southern rap very heavily lately.
Okay.
So that's for you. Now, Denisha, this is for you. Love will keep us together. Don't mess around. You gotta be strong. Stop, stop, cause I really love you. Stop, stop, I've been thinking of you. Look in your heart, Denisha. Thank you, Denisha. I messed it up a little bit, but I hope you appreciated that. And thank you. And now we're going to take
Captain and Tennille.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, I was listening to it today. So sue me. Now we're going to take a quick break and get to the story when we come back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So
nice.
I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah, I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering.
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's better, HELP.com/fruit.
3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast that holds weekly gatherings around the campfire. Let me tell you what you're going to get. You're going to hear stories about demonic possessions, prison stabbings, skinwalkers, glitches in the Matrix, cult leaders, missing 411, night marchers, Operation Paperclip, Mesopotamian devil worship, and so many monsters it'll give Kanye West a runaway for his money. Pop and meme culture also aren't off topic. A camp where laughs and scares are constantly competing for first place. We're just a group of friends trying to bust each other's balls, find the best stories, and expand the circle in the process. 3 a.m., the comedy horror podcast, not for the faint or fragile of heart. Let's go.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy.
People don't always realize that physical symptoms like headaches, teeth grinding, and even digestive issues can be indicators of stress. And let's not forget about doom scrolling, sleeping too little, sleeping too much, undereating, and overeating.
Okay, so the copy here says to talk about my experience with stress. Oh boy, do you have an hour? Where do I begin? Work, bills, life, family. I could go
podcast.
On for a very, podcast, a very long time. And I actually do. Though in therapy, which is so helpful for me, so I can manage, deal, and get through it.
Stress shows up in all kinds of ways, and in a world that's telling you to do more, sleep less, and grind all the time, here's your reminder to take care of yourself, do less, and maybe try some therapy.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't wanna.
It's more affordable than in-person therapy. Give it a try and see if online therapy can help lower your stress.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp and Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color. Listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fruit.
That's BETTERHELP.com/fruit.
All right, guys, it's time for me to come clean. It's
okay.
It's time for me to tell the truth.
All right.
It's time for me to spill the beans.
Okay.
It's time to fess up. It's time to keep it a buck. Keep it 100.
Are you going to get to it?
Oh, yes. So sometimes after dark, I sneak away and play best fiends. Others may wonder about my mysterious disappearances. They say, who does she think she is? David Blaine? David Copperfield? I say none of the above. In fact, I'm having so much fun playing best fiends. Ever heard of it?
Why, yes, I have. I love best fiends. I love collecting the little monsters when you play so I can level up my fiends. Also, I love going in for the super long matches to free up the board and beat levels.
Ooh.
I am happy to report that I am on level 440.
That's amazing. Okay, friend, I see you flexing over there. Now, Best Fiends is a free-to-download mobile puzzle game with thousands of exciting new levels for new adventures and challenges every time you play. I am on level 304. Beth, tell them about the offline play.
Yes, of course. There is offline play, so you don't even need Wi-Fi or the internet.
Oh, good.
So download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play.
You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5.
That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. All right, we're back. Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Today we're talking about Tony Alvin Abels, a man in St. Petersburg, Florida, who was convicted of 2 murders and connected via DNA to 2 others.
Ooh, I love it when DNA is a ooh, yes. Yeah. I love it when DNA is a character. Yeah. Yes. Alvin Abels has 4 victims. He was convicted of killing 2 people. One of his victims was a black male, Thornton Gross. And then he had 3 female victims and they were white. So rest in power again to Thornton Gross. Rest in power to 84-year-old retiree Adeline McLaughlin, 31-year-old Deborah Kaiser, and 48-year-old Marlene Burns. Abels was born in December 1974 in, have you heard this rumor in St. Petersburg, Florida. So he's a Florida man, and he's a Capricorn, if you are curious. He was 76 years old, he is 76 years old currently. He had several AKAs other than Florida man, which I have just given him. Tony Abels, Thaddeus Gordon. I've never heard that name before. Michael Jones and James Shelby. And his crimes took place from 1970 to 1990. That's a big time period.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to death, but his sentence was commuted to life for reasons we'll get into. But for now, let's get into the setting. Take us there, Beth.
The setting is St. Petersburg, Florida, between 1970 and 1990. Various Native American peoples, too many to list, have inhabited Florida for at least 14,000 years. In 1513, Spanish explorer Juan Ponce de Leon became the first known European to make landfall, calling the region La Florida in honor of Pascua Florida, meaning flowery festival or feast of flowers, Spain's Easter time celebration.
But it already had a name and people who lived there who were minding their beeswax.
Yeah.
Anyway, today, Pascua Florida, Florida Day is celebrated as a state public holiday in Florida and is an annual celebration of Juan Ponce de León's arrival. I'm just going to say that I hate that. And I think it's basura to celebrate that. Anyway,
yeah, let's keep it about the flowers, okay? Yeah, I like flower festivals.
Flowers is fine.
Yeah.
Juan Ponce de León is not. Now, Florida became the first area in the continental U.S. to be permanently settled by Europeans, with the Spanish colony of St. Augustine founded in 1565 being the oldest continuously inhabited city.
On April 14th, 1528, the Panfilo de Narvaez expedition landed on the shores of Boca Ciega Bay on Florida's central west coast, where St. Petersburg now sits at the Jungle Prada site. It was the first inland exploration by Europeans of North America.
I love the names of places because Boca Ciega means like blind mouth. I don't know.
I'm not sure what that means.
I don't know
means.
What that's about.
Yeah.
However, out of 300 men on the expedition, only 4 survived.
Wow.
One of the survivors of the expedition, Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca, wrote the first book describing people's wildlife flora and fauna of inland North America in his Relación, published in Spain in 1542. By the way, my son brought home Cabeza de Vaca reading assignment.
Oh, okay.
About this conquistador. And I had to explain to my son that this man was a rapist and a murderer. Next.
Can't wait to see his essay and what his teacher says.
I don't know if I helped him or hurt him, but I had to tell the truth.
The history of Black people in Florida dates back to this time, beginning with the arrival of Congolese Spanish conquistador Juan Garrido in 1513, the enslaved Afro-Spanish explorer Estevanico in 1528, and the landing of free and enslaved African persons at Mission Nombre de Dios in the future St. Augustine, Florida in 1565.
Estevanico is considered the first African to explore
explore North America. Estevanico was taken captive and enslaved and sold to a Spanish nobleman in Spain in about 1521. In 1527, he was taken on the Spanish Narvaez expedition to explore La Florida, which at the time was composed of present-day Florida, and on all unexplored lands to the north and west, including northern Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first black city in the state formed in the St. Augustine region when a military outpost of free black settlers was established at Fort Mose. The black population became numerous in St. Augustine when fugitive enslaved peoples were promised freedom in exchange for military service.
Guess what? They didn't get it, though.
Yeah. Guess what? They lied.
They lied. By the early 18th century, the indigenous Floridians living east of the Apalachicola River had mostly been killed off. Some Apalaches migrated to Louisiana, where their descendants now live. Some were taken to Cuba and Mexico by the Spanish in the 18th century, and a few may have been absorbed into the Seminole and Miccosukee tribes.
Florida was repeatedly contested by Spain and Great Britain before being ceded to the U.S. in 1819, when then Secretary of State John Quincy Adams signed the Florida Purchase Treaty, bringing the Spanish era to an end, and the Afro-Spanish population departed to Cuba.
I like the way you said Cuba.
Cuba.
Formal U.S. occupation began in 1821, and General Andrew Jackson, by the way,
I gotta say something about Andrew.
Because Andrew Jackson is like one of the most terrible human beings to ever walk the face of the earth. And Andrew Jackson was president and a general during the 1820s, right? And he was vice president. But racism has always been wrong, but it was acceptable. Andrew Jackson's time. But Andrew Jackson was so racist that people at the time were like, whoa, bruh, cool it.
That's how bad it was. Wow.
So General Andrew Jackson was appointed military governor. Florida was organized as a U.S. territory in 1822 and was admitted into the Union as a slave state in 1845. Black enslaved people soon became the main black population in the state.
After the Civil War, there was a brief Reconstruction era from 1867 to 1877. This included enforcement of rights for Black people. This era vanished suddenly, the result of the Compromise of 1877, which was an electoral college dispute centered around the legitimacy of the 1876 presidential election.
Yeah, and also violence was a big part of why Reconstruction failed as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The Compromise of 1877 was an unwritten deal informally arranged among United States congressmen that settled the dispute. It resulted in the federal government pulling the last troops out of the southern United States. They were there to help keep order because this Reconstruction was so revolutionary, but
right.
Really freaked white people
yeah.
out. But
white people were not complying.
Right. So the last troops were pulled out of the southern United States and Reconstruction ended.
Through the compromise, Republican Rutherford B. Hayes was awarded the presidency over Democrat Samuel J. Tilden on the understanding that Hayes would remove the federal troops whose support was essential for the survival of Republican state governments in South Carolina, Florida, and Louisiana. Hayes received 185 electoral votes to Tilden's 184 electoral votes. Despite losing the election, Tilden had won the popular vote with 4,301,000 votes to 4,036,000 votes for Hayes.
Wow.
So it was a very small number.
Wow. Yeah, it is. It is a small margin. History is really repeating itself.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Certainly is. Yeah.
Now, during Reconstruction, Black people had registered to vote, run for office, established churches, opened businesses, and purchased land. But post-Reconstruction policies allowed for civil rights for Black people to lapse. Jim Crow segregation laws, widespread disenfranchisement, and discriminatory social norms and systems negated many efforts for Black Americans to achieve real civil, legal, or social equality.
Black voters and Black politicians vanished under threat and acts of violence from reactionary white people. By the turn of the century, two decades of relentless, violent white pushback against change meant that hopes of a changed and equitable South were largely gone.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
It's depressing. So from 1900 to 1930, per capita, lynching was the highest in Florida than in any other state.
Wow.
Offenders were often known, but no legal proceedings ensued.
Surprise!
In 1951, with the murder of civil rights activist Harry and Harriet Moore in Mims, Florida, a tipping point was reached.
The couple was killed on Christmas Day by an explosive device made from dynamite, which had been placed directly under their bedroom floor.
Wow.
The murders triggered nationwide protests, rallies, memorials, and other events.
Wow. Over the years, five separate criminal investigations have been initiated and completed. The last one in 2008, when the FBI again investigated the Moore homicides as part of the Department of Justice's Cold Case Initiative.
Four subjects who were known to be high-ranking members within the Ku Klux Klan in the central region of Florida were identified as the main suspects, but no arrests were ever made in the case, and all four of the subjects are now deceased. Mm. The Department of Justice Civil Rights Division closed the file on the federal investigation in 2011.
Wow. They just close files, huh? On
people. I think there wasn't enough evidence, or so they said.
Yeah. So they said.
By 2011, I wouldn't think they would care, you know? It wasn't like back when it. Yeah, you're sighing.
Yeah, it's okay.
You're like, oh, woman, you have so much to learn.
No, Beth, you are one of the good ones. No, I just think it's just interesting the way the FBI operates and has operated since its inception, and how it views and pursues crimes committed by white murderers.
White people, yeah.
Yeah. And murders conducted by the state and state officials. Compared to those who young people who may have written notes in their rap notebook about wanting to kill and cause harm, right? Just their ideas put
right.
them on trial, or will get them in caught up with the FBI or catch a case with the FBI. It's just the eyes of justice. That bitch is supposed
agree.
To be blind,
yeah,
but
yeah.
doesn't look like it. Anyway.
I'm just wondering, like, 60 years later, and the suspects are deceased, you know, mm-hmm. why would they be so...
Why would the FBI be interested?
You know, back in 1951, they would want, you know, a lot of those... like the police departments and stuff would want to protect these people.
Right.
60 years later, why would they care to protect them anymore?
Yeah. And I think a lot of it also has to do with the people who work in the FBI and work in these the Department of Justice also have, I think, a strong desire to protect the institution, not necessarily the people.
Oh, okay.
And there were people in the FBI who could have investigated this type of thing. It kind of reminds me of the Martin Luther King death, how the investigation was fumbled.
Yeah.
You know, reopened, closed, reopened, examined from this angle and that angle. And my conclusion is that there is the institution wants to protect itself, not necessarily the individuals
who
were in charge.
The crime.
Yeah. That's my thought.
Okay.
But
okay.
What do I know? Anyway.
Yeah, I'm just curious, you know, why would they care to protect these people anymore 60
yeah.
years later? But that makes
yeah.
sense.
Yeah. Yeah. America has a really hard time looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
And if you see your lipstick is smudged, you should fix it. But the FBI just closes the mirror.
That's funny.
So a violent era was followed by continued segregation, but Governor Leroy Collins, who served as the governor of Florida from 1955 to 1961, took the position that segregation was morally unfair and wrong. This was succeeded by the Federal Civil Rights Act in 1964. Schools were integrated, but not without difficulty, and which we've discussed in previous episodes.
Yeah. During the early 1900s, Black people made up nearly half of the state's population. In response to segregation, disenfranchisement, and agricultural depression, many Black folks migrated from Florida to northern cities during the Great Migration. They moved for better jobs, better education for their children, and the chance to vote and participate in society.
Also to live.
And to live, yes.
And not die.
By 1960, the percentage of Black people in the state had declined to 18%. So wow. 50% to 18%.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wow. Florida, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Yes.
In the meantime, large numbers of white... Who am I kidding? Florida is not ashamed. Anyway, in the meantime, large numbers of white people had moved into the state. As of 2010, Black people accounted for only 16% of Florida's population. Today, concentrations of Black residents can be found mostly in northern and central Florida.
Aside from Black people who are descended from enslaved Africans brought to the southern U.S., there are also large numbers of West Indian, Afro-Caribbean, recent African, and Afro-Latino people, mm-hmm. especially in the Miami/South Florida area.
Oh, yeah. So St. Petersburg is on the west coast of Florida, on the Pinellas Peninsula between Tampa Bay and the Gulf of Mexico, and is connected to mainland Florida to the north. It was founded in 1888 by John C. Williams, who purchased the land, and by Peter Demons, who brought the railroad industry into the area. By the way, are we going to talk about how Florida looks like a penis?
Well, we're talking about it right now.
Okay. Every time I think of that state.
So it's the penis of the United States.
It's America's dick.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, sorry, Florida. Nope.
So St. Petersburg was named after St. Petersburg, Russia, where Peter Demons had spent half his youth. A local legend says that John C. Williams and Peter Demons flipped a coin to see who would have the honor of naming the city. Peter Demons won and named the city after his home, while John C. Williams named the first hotel after his birthplace, Detroit. And the hotel was built by Peter Demons.
Okay. Now the Detroit, very interesting. The Detroit Hotel still exists downtown, but has been turned into a condominium. The oldest running hotels are the historic Cordova Inn, formerly Hotel Cordova, built in 1921, and the Heritage Hotel, built in 1926.
St. Petersburg was incorporated as a town in 1892 and reincorporated as a city in 1903. In 1914, airplane service across Tampa Bay from St. Petersburg to Tampa and back was initiated, generally considered the first scheduled commercial airline flight.
Wow, that sounds important.
Yeah.
The company name was the St. Petersburg Tampa Airboat Line, and the pilot was Tony Janus, flying a Benoist 14 flying boat. The Tony Janus Award is presented annually for outstanding achievement in the airline industry. Janus Live, a local music/entertainment venue on Central Avenue in downtown, is also named after him.
A flying boat.
A flying boat.
I'm on a boat.
I'm on with T-Pain. Oh, Beth, you're the best. Best white lady in the game.
Tourism declined by the late 1920s and early 1930s due to the Great Depression. The city recovered later in the 1930s with the help of the Public Works Administration, including a $10 million investment plan in 1939, which helped build the St. Petersburg City Hall.
Wow. The Second World War brought renewed growth as the city's Bayboro Harbor became a training place for the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Army Air Force chose the city as their technical service training station. The hotels filled up for the first time in years as approximately 100,000 troops came to St. Petersburg. After the war, many of the troops who were stationed in St. Petersburg returned as residents or tourists.
The city population continued to multiply during the 20th century, booming in the 1940s and 50s and through the 1970s as the town became a popular retirement destination for Americans from Midwestern cities, reaching approximately 240,000 in 1980.
By that time, however, the population had leveled off and has grown by only 10,000 since then. In the decade from 2000 to 2010, the population of the city dropped by approximately 4,000 residents. Did they all die? They're retired, right?
Yeah, Who knows?
While in the same period, the population of Florida as a whole increased by over 2.5 million residents.
In 2014, the New York Times proclaimed St. Petersburg as, quote, one of the top places to go in the world, unquote.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look up that article and find out why.
Yeah, good question.
Why? Since then, St. Petersburg has been host to hundreds of events, which has brought in millions of tourists.
Interesting. So located in the Gulf of Mexico, the average water temperature is typically around 76 degrees Fahrenheit, 24 degrees Celsius.
Nice.
For all my metric fans out there. Due to its good weather and low cost of living, the city has long been a popular retirement destination. Although in recent years, the population has moved in a much more youthful direction.
With an average of some 361 days of sunshine each year.
That's nice.
A Guinness World Record for the most consecutive days of sunshine, 768 days between 1967 and 1969. That's nuts.
That is amazing nuts.
Yeah.
Wow.
So its nickname is the Sunshine City.
What a perfect fit.
Yeah.
In 2010, the racial makeup of St. Petersburg was approximately 69% white, 24% black, 3% Asian, 0.3% Native American, 0.1% Pacific Islander, and 4% from other races. Hispanic or Latinx people of any race numbered about 7%, with 2% Puerto Rican, 1% Mexican, 1% Cuban, and other Hispanic or Latino people making up 2% of the population.
If you live in or want to visit the area, which is also known as St. Pete, you can learn about Black history specific to the city by going to the African American Heritage Trail, which is a self-guided walking tour that provides an overview of the African American influence and history in St. Pete.
That is really cool.
Yeah.
So covering more than a dozen city blocks in South St. Pete's downtown area, 19 markers identify landmarks and provide details about the history of St. Pete's African American community. Individuals, groups, and classes can arrange for a guided tour, walking or by trolley.
Wow. Woo!
By contacting the African American Heritage Association. You'll find a link to their website in our show notes.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
Ohio is a land of mystery, from missing shipwrecks and lost treasure beneath her surface to strange phenomena slicing through her skies, from myths that have evolved around historic events and people to the unsolved murders and disappearances that keep her communities wondering what happened. Find Ohio Mysteries on your favorite podcast app and let's explore the inexplicable. OhioMysteries.com.
From DNA testing to the Dixie Mafia, Crime Capsule brings you new stories of true crime in American history. I'm your host, Benjamin Morris. Join us for exclusive interviews with authors from Arcadia Publishing, writing the hottest books on the most chilling stories of our country's past. You can find us wherever you get your favorite podcasts or on evergreenpodcasts.com. Crime Capsule. History so interesting, it's criminal.
Get ready for your starring role in a thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes, danger, and romance.
That's right. It's June's Journey, and you play June Parker, an amateur detective investigating a series of mysteries.
Ooh, you'll put your powers of observation to the test, sharpen your sleuthing skills, find objects, and claim rewards.
The visuals are fire. It's like a party for your eyeballs. As you play this thrilling adventure full of hidden clues, immersive scenes with danger and romance in full force.
Whether you're craving a good mystery or just need to get away for a while, June's Journey is the perfect game for you.
It really is a sweet escape. I like to play when I need a mental pick-me-up.
There is a detective in all of us. Find your inner detective. Download June's Journey free today on the Apple App Store or Google Play. So now it's time to talk about Tony Alvin Abel's early life. What do you got, Beth?
Tony Alvin Abels, who is Black, was born on December 28, 1954, in Florida. According to Tony's father, Clyde Abels, born in 1932, also Black, they moved to St. Petersburg when Tony was just a child. Tony had 7 brothers and sisters.
Big family.
Yeah.
His dad was born in 1932, so I can just imagine like the racial trauma
and
horror that he experienced. But Clyde Abels worked in construction. Tony's mother, Ari Lee Abels, midname Reed, I guess, was a Black woman, and she abandoned the family in the 1960s, an event his father said placed terrible strains on the children. Although one of Tony's brothers has said that the reason their mother left was because their father was abusing her.
Ari Lee had only been about 15 years old when she married Clyde in 1952, when he was 20. Ugh, gross.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah. I guess different time. I don't know.
Yeah. It was a different time. It probably wasn't that unusual, but still gross. They were married in Washington, Florida. She would have been about 17 years old when Tony was born and about 27 years old when he was 10, which maybe was when she left. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clyde and Ari Lee divorced in 1974 when Tony was 20.
According to Clyde, until Ari Lee left, Tony was an outgoing, friendly kid who was a good violin player. But he began running away when he was 13 years old and often disappeared for months.
Over the course of his life, Tony was alternatively known as Tony Abels, E-L-S, a spelling change from Abels, L-E-S. And according to some accounts, which we at Fruit Loops could not verify, he was also known as Thaddeus Gordon, Michael Jones, and James Selby.
So now we're going to dive on into the timeline. On December 11th, 1970, a couple weeks before his 16th birthday, Abel shot and killed 68-year-old Thornton Gross. Thornton had lived at 1040 22nd Street South in St. Petersburg, Florida, which, if you look up the address on Googleisha, turns out to now be part of the St. Petersburg College Cecil B. Keene Student Achievement Center. Interesting.
Cecil B. Keene was a Black man native to Pinellas County who advocated for those who needed help and encouragement to reach their potential and inspired those who thought an education was beyond their reach. And I hope that Thornton can be proud of what his former residence has become, wherever Thornton's consciousness may be right now.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you, Minnie. Abels lived at 591 20th Street South in St. Petersburg at the time, which now appears to be the Pinellas County Job Corps Center, a trade school. The two locations were less than a mile from each other, so it's possible that Abels may have known or stalked his victim. We don't really know. But he had apparently killed him while robbing him. And this was Abels' only known male victim.
Thornton's body was found the same day he was shot in an alley west of 22nd Street, having died of a large caliber gunshot wound to his heart. The circumstances of the investigation were unclear from the information that we found, but Abels was arrested for the murder on December 9th, 1970, and was held in the Pinellas County Jail from that date until he was indicted on January 12th, 1971. Looks like Abels spent his 16th birthday in jail. Party!
Oh, man.
Break out the prison cake. Wait, no. Breakout might not be the appropriate term to use here.
Oh, wow. Well, that's, I mean, obviously, different time. It's the 70s, but for a kid to be
in jail
for that long,
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of it. So funeral services were held for Thornton Gross on January 15th, 1971. And on March 19th, 1971, Abels pleaded guilty to first-degree murder and was sentenced to life in prison for killing Thornton, but was paroled 12 years later, in 1983 at the age of 28. After his release, he found a job doing construction work like his father had done.
On June 25th, 1983, early in the morning before sunrise, someone shattered the first-floor apartment window of Adeline McLaughlin, an 83-year-old widow who lived in the Ten Eyck Hotel on 132 Mirror Lake Drive, a downtown retirement community overlooking Mirror Lake.
The assistant manager of the hotel found her body at about 8:15 a.m. that Saturday morning. She had been sexually assaulted and smothered with a pillow. The apartment was burglarized, and an autopsy showed that she had died of choking and asphyxiation.
Adeline, a white woman, was described by her fellow residents as slender and stylish and liked to spend her time quietly on the veranda of her hotel, overlooking the lake. Her neighbors said she was, quote, not a fussy person, was not very talkative, and never gossiped about others, unquote.
She had moved to St. Petersburg from Worcester, Massachusetts, about 25 years prior to retire there with her husband. Her husband had died of a stroke in December 1981, and she had moved to the retirement hotel the following April in 1982. Her niece, Anne McLean, said that Adeline had expressed liking St. Petersburg and being happy in the hotel where she had lived before her life was taken from her so suddenly on June 25th, 1982.
This was 5 months after Tony Abels's release from prison in 1983, though he was not a suspect at the time and the case remained unsolved for years. But Abels was arrested a number of times on petty crimes over the next few years.
Yeah, he really didn't waste much time.
No.
And I wonder what resources might have been available to
for him.
Yeah. So he wouldn't have to rob.
Do
you know what I'm saying?
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. So on the morning of Saturday, February 14th, 1987, a man walking along a path near the Rozier Park Bridge in a small residential neighborhood in St. Petersburg found a woman's partially clothed body in a clearing in some thick brush. Happy Valentine's Day. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's
February 14th.
That's Look crazy. At that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're jealous, aren't you, though?
So.
Because he found a body.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have been a perfect Valentine's present for you.
For me? For me? For my sick ass? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, everybody.
Sorry, yeah.
The woman was later identified as Deborah Kaiser. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled, and a pair of blue jeans, likely hers, had been found next to her partially undressed body. She was 31 years old when she was murdered.
Deborah, a white woman, was born in California and had moved to St. Petersburg from Monterey, California in 1970. By 1987, she was living in a Boley, Inc. transitory home for quote-unquote mental patients. She had been missing from the home since the previous Wednesday, February 11th, and the home had filed a missing persons report for her with the police on Thursday, February 12th.
A person matching Deborah's description had been seen using a payphone in front of a nearby apartment building that Friday night before she was found. But this was the last time she was reported to have been seen alive by anyone other than her murderer. Police estimated that she'd been dead for about 12 hours before she'd been found at about 8:30 a.m. that Saturday morning.
The brutal killings of Adeline and Deborah remained unsolved for years. St. Petersburg detectives submitted DNA samples for testing in the late 1990s, but had no luck at the time.
On Monday, June 4th, 1990, a now 35-year-old Abels was heard arguing with his 48-year-old girlfriend, Marlene T. Burns, a white woman, in their apartment on 615 Grove Street in St. Petersburg. Witnesses saw Abels leave at about 7:45 p.m. that evening, wiping blood from his hands and carrying an object. Uh-oh.
What? He's just wiping around, wiping blood on his... What the hell? Another resident found Marlene's body at about 11:30 p.m. and then called emergency services. Paramedics pronounced her dead at the scene. She had been beaten to death with a blunt object.
Wow.
So, yeah, now we're going to get into the investigation and the arrest. Hit it, Beth.
By the time police arrived that night in response to the emergency call, Abels had returned to the apartment that he shared with Marlene, but the blunt object that he had used to beat her to death was gone.
Police took him in for questioning, then charged him with first-degree murder. He was held without bail at the Pinellas County Jail north of St. Petersburg. So now it's time for the trial.
We couldn't find much detail about the trial itself, but on January 30th, 1992, about a year and a half later, Tony Abels was convicted of beating and kicking Marlene to death. At the time, the jury recommended by an 8-4 vote that the penalty should be death by electrocution, the infamous electric chair, Old Sparky.
I was going to say, it's been a long time since I've heard even the words electric chair uttered.
Yeah.
It's, we don't, I mean, I know this happened anymore. In the 90s. We don't do that anymore.
But that's not that long ago, you know?
That's true. You're right.
What is it? 30 years ago. that's almost half my lifetime ago.
Time
but
is a funny thing.
It doesn't seem like that long ago, yeah.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't. I mean, I remember electric chair being mentioned in movies that I saw at the time, or on the news it would come up, you know, when the reporters were discussing crimes, but we just don't talk about it anymore. On May 11th, 1992, his sentence was commuted to life imprisonment by Justice Bob Barker. What's that? The price is wrong, bitch. Just kidding. So Judge Barker felt that Abel's mental health issues, along with other issues, outweighed aggravating factors in the case.
The prosecutor, Bob Heyman, argued in favor of the death penalty, saying that Marlene and Abels had been drinking and arguing the day that he killed her, and that Abels thought she was seeing another man. He had found her in another apartment that evening and had thrown her down the stairs, then beat and kicked her to death.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know you're not supposed to breathe in a microphone like that, but wow.
Yeah.
Her ribs had been fractured in 29 places.
Whoa.
Yeah. Witnesses had said that they had heard loud noises for about an hour. An hour during this time. So he must have
been beating her
that entire time.
Why didn't they call police?
Nobody called
that time?
Anybody or knocked on the door or anything. Wow. I don't like to think about what her final hour must have been like.
And
it just must have been pure hell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's sad.
Yeah.
Heyman said that he couldn't think of a more aggravating factor.
I thought it said, hey, man.
Hey, man.
I'm sorry. I'm like, why did you say hey, man? This is
hey, man.
Okay, sorry. I couldn't
think of a more aggravating factor.
Oh, my God. Okay. Ooh. Wow.
Prosecutor Heyman said that he couldn't think of a more aggravating factor in support of the death penalty than his prior murder conviction, and that Abels killed because he was just, quote unquote, darn mean.
Well, you know,
I think he's right.
Hey, man, I think I might I don't do this often, but I might have to agree with this prosecutor.
Yeah.
Now, the defense attorney, Tom McCoon, argued that Abels had mental issues that prevented him from curbing his impulses and that he couldn't help himself from acting on impulse. He also brought in Abels' brother, Anthony, to testify as to their difficult childhood. Wait a minute. So Abels' name is Tony and his brother is also named Tony?
Well, it's Anthony, but Tony is short for Anthony. So, yeah, that's confusing.
It is. But there was seven of them, so maybe their parents were like,
whatever.
Let's just name him Anthony.
Yeah. Why did you get the fancy name? Why did I get Tony? I'm going to kill people.
Oh, my gosh. Maybe that was it.
That was it. Yeah. Anyway, Abel's brother Anthony said that their parents constantly fought and that their father abused their mother to the extent that she left the family. Anthony did say that he wondered why she didn't take the children with her.
Judge Barker did say that the brutal nature of the murder was enough to warrant the death penalty, but that he didn't think it would hold up on appeal because of the complicating factors of his mental health and childhood. Abels has been in prison since that time. So now we're going to get into the follow-up investigation, because remember, my girl DNA is coming through, and the arrest.
The murders of Adeline and Deborah remained unsolved until 2006, when homicide detectives were finally able to match Abels' DNA with evidence found on both women's bodies. In 2005, St. Petersburg homicide detectives had submitted DNA samples recovered from various unsolved homicides to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement.
By then, there had been advances in DNA technology. And in December of 2006, St. Petersburg Homicide received confirmation that the evidence recovered from Adeline McLaughlin's body and Deborah Kaiser's body matched with Abel's, who had provided a DNA sample. After his 1992 conviction for Marlene's murder, the police finally had the evidence they needed to arrest Abel's for the murders of Adeline and Deborah. Abel's was not charged with killing Deborah, as they were romantically involved, which, what the fuck? But officials considered the case closed.
So this is an aside from Minnie, and she said, personally, I don't see how someone being romantically involved with their victim excuses them from sexually assaulting and murdering them, but I imagine it's more of a complicating factor based on evidence. It would be more difficult to prove that DNA found on the person didn't get there as part of a consensual interaction and that there wasn't another unidentified person who actually did the assault and murder, but it's got to be terribly frustrating for the victim's family. Yeah. And I think we all know that it's highly likely that he did it, but courts feel that it would be too difficult and costly to prove it. Plus, he's already in prison for life and facing another charge. So I guess they figured avoid the cost and close that case.
Maybe. And also, it's the 90s. Early
2000s.
And I think the way we talk about sexual assault and domestic partner violence is different now. And so I don't know if maybe in a 2022 lens, if the outcome would have been exactly
different,
the same. You know what I mean? So with the DNA evidence, Abel's faced one additional charge of first degree murder for the murder of Adeline McLaughlin. On December 5th, 2006, he was brought to the Pinellas County Jail to be booked for the murder, but was not formally charged.
At the time, police said that Abel's is a serial killer who may have committed more unsolved homicides. Michael Poots, a major in the St. Petersburg police force at the time, said, quote, "We do suspect there's a high probability that there's more he's responsible for than what we've been able to link him to so far," unquote. He also said that he didn't think Abel's would ever have been identified as a suspect in these cases if it weren't for the advances in DNA technology.
Father God, I just want to thank you for blessing us with DNA technology. Amen. Sergeant Mike Kovachev, the head of homicide investigations at the time, said, quote, "The investigators spoke to the families and it was nice to give them closure. Unfortunately, the DNA testing back then wasn't as sophisticated as it is now," unquote.
Sergeant Kovachev said that Abel's didn't want to talk to police, but Clyde Abel's, Tony's father, 74 at the time of an interview in December 2006, said that he was saddened by the accusations. Quote, "It's hard on me, and I know it's hard on the victims' families. I feel for them," unquote. And I wonder if he thought about his abuse of his children and former wife and felt for them, too, at the time.
I don't know. I mean, I've known a lot of old black men, and in my experience,
no,
they're not. Well, yeah, I mean, they're not. I'm just speaking from my experience that they don't look at their past, past in that way. This is just my experience.
I'm saying old men in general.
Oh, there we go. I think that's also fair that old men, for some reason, have a hard time looking back.
Yeah. and finding any fault in how they live their life.
Finding any fault.
Yeah.
Man.
Must be nice.
I'm telling you. Oh, my God. As far as we can tell to this day, Abel's has yet to be formally charged with Adeline's murder. I wonder if they've just decided it's not worth the cost of the trial, but we feel for Adeline.
Yeah.
She seemed like a nice lady. So we're going to keep you in our thoughts and prayers, Adeline, and to obviously her surviving family members.
Yeah.
So now we're going to get into where are they now? What do you got, Beth?
Abel's is currently serving time at Charlotte Correctional Institution in Punta Gorda, Florida. In my minimal understanding of Spanish, this directly translates to fat point.
Yes, that is true. We commented on the very funny names that the conquistadors put on places in Florida. By the way, did you know that the name of the Grand Tetons Mountains directly translates to big tits in France?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
But yeah, and then there's Mesa, Arizona, which is a rocky formation that looks like a table, but Mesa is literally table.
So there's a place in Arizona named Table Mesa.
No, yeah. There is.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's actually named Table Table.
Table Table. Thanks, Minnie. Yeah. The more you know.
The Charlotte Correctional Institution in Punta Gorda is a state prison for men owned and operated by the Florida Department of Corrections. This facility has a mix of security levels. It first opened in 1989 and has a maximum capacity of 1,291 prisoners. Don't forget that one.
Don't forget that one. And then also think of those prisoners count as constituents.
Right. Even though they
So the bigger the prisons, the more the prisoners, the more constituents and seats that elected officials get.
Right.
Prisons are big business in Florida and other parts of the United
elsewhere,
States.
Elsewhere, yeah.
Yeah. So a 2015 grand jury report delivered a quote, blistering and graphic rebuke, unquote, to the Florida Department of Corrections for the beating death of Charlotte inmate Matthew Walker on April 11th, 2014 at the hands of guards. God damn it. Reporters John Hackworth and Brian Gleason of Suncoast Media Group were awarded with a 2016 Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing for their reporting on Walker's death.
Then
there's more.
Yep, there's more. On June 4th, 2015, inmate Peter Peterkin was found dead in circumstances that officials refused to explain to his family.
Huh?
And then on August 4th, 2015, inmate Conta Howard was found dead. His death became the seventh ongoing criminal investigation at Charlotte. Yikes.
Son of a bitch.
There's only how many people? 1,291 people, and there's all this shit going on. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's worse is I'm looking at these names and these numbers, and this is just scratching the surface, y'all.
Yeah.
Abel's father, Clyde Abel's, passed away on July 29th, 2015, survived by his wife, five sons, four daughters, four siblings, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and other relatives. Abel's mother, Ari Lee, passed away on January 4th, 2007, and we weren't able to find any other details about her life after she left Clyde or her children or about her death. So now we're going to get into our takeaways and what we think might have made Abel snap. Well, first let's start with what Minnie had to say.
Yeah, Minnie said, I wonder if Abel's held anger for his mother his entire life for leaving the kids with an abusive father, and that's why his victims were primarily women who were older than him. Mm. And I think Minnie might be onto something.
Yeah.
Regardless of the circumstances of her leaving, it may have made sense for her at the time.
Yeah.
As a child, Abel's wouldn't understand it and would just feel abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly where he was in the sibling order. I think kind of at the top, but he did have a lot of siblings and they were left with an abusive father. So it's no wonder that he started acting out when he was a teenager.
Yep.
And then he, you know, committed a murder and spent 12 years in jail. So most of his young adult life in prison. And that's got to fuck you up.
Yeah. Not a lot of nurturing going on in there, as we've heard.
Right. Yeah. And the judge mentioned mental health issues, but we don't know what those were. Mm-hmm. However, for a judge to be like, nah, death penalty is off the table in Florida.
Girl.
Sounds like the mental health issues and other mitigating circumstances must have been pretty bad. I just wish we knew what they were. But
yeah,
I'm confident that his life was pretty horrible.
I agree. I could not agree with you more. That judge's decision really threw me for a loop. I was like, my neck hurts from cocking my head so hard. And yeah, he just took Abel's brother's word for it on this trauma that they experienced. And it's a huge surprise. I think abandonment and the trauma experienced in his childhood had a lasting effect. We know it does. And we've talked about trauma in the past and people's ACE scores. Remember adverse childhood experiences and the rating scale on a scale of 1 to 10. And it's a tally of different types of abuse, neglect, and other difficulties or traumas endured during childhood. And the higher your score, the higher your risk for mental and physical health problems. And it makes it difficult for people to regulate their emotions and their behavior.
Yeah.
And having someone, you know, who loves you or trusts you or, you know, getting mental health treatment can help mitigate those effects. But I gather Florida Man, aka Tony Alvin Abels, score was likely very high, given what we know. And I mean, he killed somebody at 15, and then became part of the carceral system, and likely endured many more traumas and abuse, and came out of prison even worse.
Right.
And I think we all understand that hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
And Abel certainly did that in the worst way by taking the people's lives, and rest in power to the victims. But this feels like I believe we can have empathy for the young person that Abel's was, as well as the victims. So now we're going to get into how not to get murdered. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
Okay, so unrelated to the case, but a little crime tip to prevent crime.
Okay.
So, you know, we've talked about before, like signage, you know, keep, you know, beware of dog signs or alarm signage around your home. Now, don't laugh.
Okay, but I can't promise anything.
But so I live in the South now, and apparently it's a lot of snakes out here.
Uh-huh.
And people don't like them. Now, there's also crime is subjective, and it's a sign of struggle. It's more of a societal issue, but there are a lot of break-ins, car break-ins.
Okay.
And so one of my neighbors posted on the Nextdoor app, y'all get yourself some rubber snakes and put them in your car or in front of your home to keep people from breaking in and getting your stuff.
Yeah.
So I went to Amazon immediately, and I have bought several realistic rubber snakes and put them in my car. And
put them in your yard too?
Not yet, because we haven't moved in.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But I did put them in the car to prevent break-ins, and so far, so good. So that's my suggestion.
That's your tip for this week.
That's my safety tip. Do you have anything?
I don't.
And as always,
maybe rubber cockroaches would work too.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Amazon.
Some rubber cockroaches or palmetto bugs, the giant ones. Oh, my
palmetto
God.
Palmetto bugs?
Yeah.
What's a palmetto bug?
They're those sewer roaches.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God. Okay. You know what? Maybe I do want to move back to Arizona. I don't know. This might be too much for me.
Oh, no. They're here. You know, those big cockroaches.
Oh, I thought that they were called... I thought those were beetles. I didn't know those were roaches.
Yeah, they're called... The common name that people call them is sewer roaches, but they're actually palmetto bugs.
Okay, well...
But they have them in Florida, too.
Oh, look at that. Bringing it back to the story.
Yeah.
Way to go, Beth. But that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I got to do whatever it takes, right?
Yeah.
To stay safe out here in these streets.
Throw a whole bunch of them in your car.
Everywhere. Buy a Land Rover, like a fancy car, and just put like bugs
with
all over it.
Yeah. There you go.
What alarm? So now it's shout out time, where we shout out any content by or about any marginalized, oppressed, or othered or underrepresented people, or any true crime goodies. I don't know if I'm right, but did you already shout out Raising Dion?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's on Netflix, and it's about a little black boy named Dion, and he has supernatural powers, but he's only like six, and so he's learning how to control them. And it was something fun that me and my kids started watching this weekend. It's really good.
Oh, so is it a kids show?
It's a kids show, it's live action. It's not like cartoon.
Right, right.
And it's got a really good cast. Again, it's a little black boy, and he's you know, it's a super diverse cast. It takes place in Atlanta, it's really, really entertaining.
Cool.
For the whole family.
Cool.
I also wanted to shout out, particularly because today we talked about trauma, it's a book called My Grandmother's Hands by Resma Manakim, and it is about trauma and healing generational trauma and the trauma that racism causes, and what we can do about it. And
oh, wow. Very cool.
It's very good. I have it on Audible, but you can also get it on paperback or hardcover. I don't know much about books. I just know you can get it on Audible. Anyway, also, last thing, this is a true crime goodie, Minds of Madness. Have you heard of it?
I have listened to it before, but I haven't listened to it recently. So
apparently it's been around for a very long time.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, yep.
It is fantastic. And it's about the most disturbing criminal minds and the impact violent crimes have on survivors. Have on survivors of homicide. And it does a really great job of humanizing the victims. Well told, well produced. And that's three shout outs. I'm so sorry. I'm so selfish.
I just always wonder, don't you want to save one for next week? Because sometimes I have a hard time finding something.
Oh, no, I never have a hard time. My life is consuming things, consuming content and entertainment. Someday I'll get paid for it. But for now, I'm just going to shout it out on the show.
Okay.
Something will never run out.
Yeah, I don't care if you shout out a bunch of them. I'm just always like, how does she get so many things?
Oh, it's my little secret.
Okay. So a few weeks ago, I shouted out The Gilded Age on HBO.
Yes.
TV show. So now I'm going to shout out The Gilded Age podcast, which is the companion piece to the series. And
ooh.
I just stumbled across it. It tells a lot of the behind the scenes stories.
Oh,
including,
I love that.
Yeah, the history that inspired some of the storylines, like the character Peggy Scott, who's black, and her family, who lives in Brooklyn and belongs to the black elite.
Uh-huh.
And so they talk about the black elite and,
nice.
And stuff like that, or the different roles of men and women during the Gilded Age,
mm-hmm.
and the industries that were booming at the time, like railroads and newspapers. And as a history and a sociology nerd, I find it fascinating.
I find that a show that has a podcast attached to it is so much more enjoyable. Like it's like,
yeah.
It's like getting to eat the lasagna and lick the plate. That's that's my favorite thing to do. And that's what this show
that's what it does.
With
yeah.
the podcast does. So that is Raising Dion on Netflix. My Grandmother's Hands, a book. Purchase it wherever you buy books, by Resma Manakim. And
wherever it is you people buy books.
Wherever I don't know. You open it, there's paper, pages.
I don't know. Never seen one.
Audible all the way, baby. And then a podcast called Minds of Madness, anywhere you get your podcasts. The Gilded Age on HBO. But on top of that, the Gilded Age podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, this was a fun one. Sorry,
it
went a little longer, but you know, whatever. So where can the people find us, Beth?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. Join our discussion group on Facebook at Fruit Loops Pod Discussion. If you want to support the show, you can send us a donation on the Cash App. Just Google Fruit Loops Pod Cash App, or you can become a monthly patron through Podbean. This will help us pay for things like our website and pod hosting. There's no minimum and no commitment. Even a dollar would help. And as always, we have merch for sale on our website.
That's right. And this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there.
detective came and knocked on the door. And I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof wherever you get your podcasts and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
So when the scammer uses the hypnotic method of building rapport, then they create dysfunctional, delusional reality.
That's how a scam begins. Convincing the mark that it makes perfect sense to hand over their money to a con artist. The Scams and Cons podcast tells you how scams are run. You'll hear how people are convinced to buy fake art, buy machines that print money, or steal your house.
I get a phone call from my wife, and she let me know that they had decided to move all our stuff out. I could no longer do anything about it except go through an eviction.
And you'll hear it from the experts. People who run the cons.
So we go to your bank, you go in and get 6,000 cash, give us each 3,000, we give you this. You go home and what you find out is cut up newspaper.
It's fun to know how the trick is done, and that's what Scams and Cons is all about. Listen at scamsandcons.com or wherever fine podcasts are found.